Holiday magic is in the air, and DSW's got all the shoes to make your season extra merry. Believe, you've got parties to attend and lists to check twice, so DSW is taking care of the details, like gifts to make their eyes all aglow, styles that bring joy to your world, brands everyone wants, like UGG, Nike, Birkenstock, and more, and deals to make your budget bright. Find the perfect shoes for you and yours at a DSW store near you or DSW.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 929 FM ESPN. I am Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe while he is out. I'm now joined by Jeff Calkins, columnist at the Daily Memphian and host of the Jeff Calkins Show from 9 to 11 a.m. on these airwaves every weekday morning. You can find him on Twitter at Jeff_Calkins. Jeff, there is only one place that we can begin this segment with, and it
is
the closing of Houston's. I need your take on it. I want to discuss my thoughts, but the people need Jeff Calkins' take on the closing of Houston.
Well, it's interesting. I went down. I missed the second hour of my show today because I was down at the St. Jude Marathon press conference, and that's where people start picking up their packets. And 22,500 people will be running, walking, skipping, whatever, through Memphis today. And it just gladdened my heart. You know, like, this is a race that back in 2000, it had been ended. Like, it was once the first Tennessee Marathon, whatever. And the folks at St. Jude, Dwight Drinkard, who was there then, and Chris Boyson and others said, you know what, I think we can do something with this marathon. And so this marathon that was over, they started working on it. And the first time, 2,800 people ran, and now they're up to 22,500 people. It's sold out. And I just sort of wrote a column about, I just so appreciate people who take it upon themselves to see what good they can do, to see what difference one person can make, to uplift the community, and it's sort of in the face of that. And the only reason I contrast it with Houston's is all I've seen on social media is this self-flagellating, self-pitying, broadcasting this because restaurant closed, Memphis is the worst place to live in the entire world, and everything is horrible, and this is more evidence that everything is horrible. And I suppose you could have said that about the marathon once, too. Marathon didn't work. It closed. I guess everything is horrible. We might as well all throw ourselves to the Mississippi River. I just get disgusted with the negativity. I really do. I think it's people revel in it. They just revel in it. And the truth of the matter is, I don't know the ins and outs of Houston's, but I know this. Whole Foods isn't going anywhere.
Right.
Seems to be right there. You know, I know people at Hog and Hominy seem to be doing a nice business. Kelly English and Iris posted on Facebook just now that they sell good chicken tender salad over there. Like, I found it to be cheap. The point is, I don't know for sure, right? It seems to me that is a place that was once a wildly popular restaurant and has grown tired and less well-managed and less popular. And yes, there are documented issues with both crime and with finding service people in this economy that lots of restaurants have had to deal with. So I'm not trying to diminish the challenges that people who run restaurants are faced with. But I think to throw Memphis under the bus as the excuse for why you couldn't manage your restaurant successfully is BS, and I wasn't a fan of it. That is my take.
Yeah. To piggyback real quick off of your St. Jude stuff, I just had Parker Fleming on, and we were talking about the Grizzlies. And as you know, Parker is married to Allie Allen, a very famous St. Jude patient. And he had some great news for us. That just Allie's allies this year alone have been able to raise $4,000 for St. Jude. And my wife works for ALSAC St. Jude. I'm very proud of her for the work that she does. And she has been able to report to me that their Giving Tuesday was just breaking records. So far, the support that the city has shown and people have shown to St. Jude is one of the reasons to be proud of the city of Memphis. So I fully agree with you. And that's kind
of
why.
It's so funny. Like they had one of the parents of one of the patients, the patient David, who was diagnosed with cancer in Florida, I think it was. They were in Fort Myers. And the oncologist said, it's rare cancer, and there's nothing we can do for you. And gave him the name of a few hospitals. And they asked, well, which one of these would you go to? And he said, I'd go to St. Jude. And so they came here and had never set foot in Memphis. And the sad part of the story is David ultimately did not live. Like, this is a incredibly rare form of cancer, and he died after several years. But to hear this family talk about the city that they had never set foot in, and the generosity of spirit and the kindness of people. He said we'd go to Huey's, and half the time we never even had to pick up a check because sort of people knew who we were, and they, you know, they celebrated us and embraced us. And to hear him talk about this city rather than to hear so many Memphians talk about the city when they had this experience, the truth of the matter is they come back. He now has family all over the country. And so they come back to Memphis every year to celebrate Thanksgiving. This is where they come to celebrate Thanksgiving. He said, you know, we'd like to come home. And then he caught himself because he said, well, it's not really our home, but it feels like that. And so I don't know. I just the fact that a chain, literally the closing of a chain restaurant is a sign of the end of civilization in Memphis is something that I do not subscribe to.
I do not either. It's people know I love me some movies. I'm at the Paradiso once a week. I shop at that Whole Foods, the Kroger around the corner. We go to Gus's all the time. Huey's around the corner. There are so many restaurants popular in Mendenhall.
Silo moving into the old McAllister's that was there. I think
they are thriving.
Know?
These restaurants, you have to be on a wait list to get into most of them. They're thriving. Is the parking situation a mess? Sure. Can traffic be a lot there sometimes? Sure. But I've lived in East Memphis now for 10 years since I came back to Memphis from the University of Tennessee. I started living in East Memphis, finishing up college at Memphis and in subsequent years, and I've never had an issue around that area. And it just bothers me that the excuse for closing a restaurant is the crime of the city when if you go
Memphis under the bus.
Yeah, if you go to that area, there's a cop car sitting in the parking lot basically 24/7. Ben and Jerry's is around the corner. Like some of our happiest memories as a couple have been right in that area. So I have a huge problem with that when, you know, Houston's is, the Dunning family loves Houston's. My dad's one of his favorite spots. We go to lunch there all the time. But after COVID, when you would go back there, they took away the bar TVs. They started having you could only have 4 people reservations. And to be quite honest with you, the quality of the food went down. The prices went up. The service went down.
That's what I got the sense.
It wasn't the same.
There seems to be a general acknowledgement that the place has declined. And that is sometimes the life cycle of a restaurant, right? And restaurants close. But to attach any larger significance to it is a place where I'm not necessarily willing to go. I mean, I did a column on Rick Spell, who owns Brookhaven, and it was just his perspective on it was just the opposite. It was, yes. I mean, you know, he actually got in touch with the police after they had an incident and wondered why it took a little while to respond to that incident. And he came away incredibly impressed by what they were doing and, you know, feeling resolute and determined and enthusiastic about the future in Memphis. So I appreciate that perspective.
Yeah, and you know, it would be naive of me to sit here and say, well, Memphis doesn't have a crime problem. It absolutely has a crime problem. That crime problem just isn't happening at Poplar and Mendenhall. Like, it's not happening right there. And
well, I'm sure people get their windows broken into every,
sure.
Like, it does have a crime problem. There is. And again, I don't think it benefits anyone to deny that, but I don't think anyone does deny that. Like, starting with the mayor, you know, and right down. I don't know anyone who denies that Memphis doesn't have a crime problem. There are some who deny that any progress is being made with the crime problem. There's a lot of denial about that, but I don't know anyone who denies that there is, literally anyone who denies that there's a crime problem. So if that's why you need to blast on social media that the closing of Huey's means, I mean, not Huey's, thank God.
Oh my God, that would be a crisis. Sorry. If Huey's was closing. I may have to call out sick if Huey's was closing.
Because of the A's is the end of the world. You know, I think people already understand that there's a crime problem. And one way to, you know, lots of ways to deal with a crime problem, honestly. But what it needs and what the community needs is people to invest in the city and be enthusiastic about the city and see what they can do to help make this be a better, safer, more welcoming place.
Absolutely, because it is a welcoming place, and I know it's the cliche of Memphis, but I always say that cliches are cliches for a reason, because they're mostly true. And Penny Hardaway was just on, you know, the podcast with Zach Randolph and Tony Allen, and he was asking them about their perspective of Memphis, and they were talking about it, and they said, Memphis was one of the few cities that I moved to and completely embraced me as a player, even though I had past things and transgressions and all those, and this is now both of their home. They both live here now, and it was just really encouraging to hear that. And that's why, you know, I do want to try to keep it positive with the city of Memphis when we discuss it. But unfortunately, I do have to transition to a little bit of a negative story that kind of came out from last night. Even though the Memphis Tigers won that basketball game against Louisiana Tech, there has been a large conversation today about the attendance numbers of last night. Mm-hmm. Are you concerned about it, or do you think it is more so it was one of the first really cold nights? You have finals going on at the University of Memphis. People didn't go to the game. It was Louisiana Tech. Where do you fall on that side of the fence?
Sure. I mean, I think if you want to be concerned, I think you can look all across the board. Memphis football numbers are down. Memphis basketball numbers are down. Redbirds numbers were down. 901 FC numbers were down. Honestly, the Grizzlies aren't just crushing it, but, you know, they're doing fine. They have they got John Morant over there. So there's sort of generally, have people's habits changed? Is it COVID? What is it? You know, there's that. I think the biggest problem that the University of Memphis faces, and this is something that John Martin and I were talking about on my show, is there are all kinds of reasons not to go to a game, right? It's cold. It's Wednesday. Parking, cost of concession. Like, you can come up with all the reasons, right? And then there's the reasons to stay home. And the reasons to stay home are, it's comfortable, it's on TV anyway, right? And it's, I don't have to go anywhere, whatever. So what causes people to get over all those things that keep you from a game? And what causes you to do that is, I feel the need to be in the building, to feel the vibe, the excitement, because it's going to be an event, right? That's why it's never been easy to go to a game. It wasn't at the Mid-South Coliseum easy to go to a game. It wasn't easy to go to a game when Memphis Plus was playing SMU in game day. It's never more convenient to go to a game. But it's a cost-benefit analysis and that everyone calculates. And so you're saying, what's the benefit? And the benefit is, this is an incredibly compelling game that I need to be there. And the problem with Memphis football and basketball, University of Memphis football and basketball, is there is never a compelling game. You know, like, literally there was not a single football game on the schedule that you're like, it could be a pain, could be traffic, could be whatever. I have to be there because this is an event. Like, literally best attendance for this season was the North Alabama game. And that's because people are like, well, I really want to see him come back, want to see the new state, see what the stadium looks like with a side blown out, whatever else. But after that, all the games are just whatever. You know, there's not a single game that is compelling, literally. Not a single game that is compelling. And you look at Memphis basketball schedule, the Ole Miss game and the Mississippi State games will be, well, those are going to be events that'll, as you do your cost-benefit analysis, will make you say, yes, I need to go to those games. But apart from that, there are none. And it's the conference. Let's be honest. It's the schism in sports that you can't, the Power Four doesn't now even want to play, the group of five. and then it's the conference. And so once upon a time, you at least had games with Houston and Cincinnati in football, UCF. And now there is literally not a game on that home schedule for Memphis basketball once you get to conference play, and not many before conference play, that makes you say, I have to get off the couch. And there's no intrinsic excitement anymore about the Penny Hardaway era, right? That sort of had been dissipated. So I'm not worried about it, and it's not the end of the world. Like, it's fine. It'll be what it'll be. The people who are there seem like they had a nice time, and the people who weren't. But I don't think there's a fix for it unless you can somehow improve the schedule or become so unbelievably good as a program that people are like, I don't care. I just need to be there to see these Tigers, you know. And there's not that level of excitement right now, as good as they may be, about these Tigers.
Do you think that the Grizzlies' success and Ja Morant being, you need to see him in person, do you think that that has any impact on the Memphis Tigers? Because we do live in a city where people have to pick and choose what they spend their money on. And do you think that some people have approached the two basketball seasons and said, I'm going to choose to spend my money with the Memphis Grizzlies because they have Ja Morant, Jaren Jackson Jr., even Zach Edey is a show when he's out there, versus the Tigers where, you know, they kind of have to prove it to everybody again before everybody buys in?
I think there are two answers to that. First answer is, I think the Grizzlies are having their own challenges. Like, as compelling as they may be, like, they're not to where they were 2 years ago. You know, I mean, you look at the attendance 2 years ago and now,
right?
And they're having their, so I think there's larger issues at play. But then beyond that, there's no question. It's not even just that people are picking and choosing. It's that, like, I have three sons. And two of my sons care deeply about sports, and they're Grizzly fans, not Tiger fans, you know? And if they had grown up in the 70s or the 80s or the 90s, they would be Tiger fans in Memphis because that's the team that you rooted for. And that's just changed. So there's been whole generations of, you know, the generations that were weaned on Larry Finch and Dana Kirk and whatever, a lot of those folks have gotten older and may not go to the games anymore or may have gone to the great, you know, stadium in the sky. And then there's a whole new generation of fans that grew up as Grizzlies fans first, right? I think so. And it doesn't mean everybody, but I think that's sort of what's happened in the city. So there's no question. Way back when, before the Grizzlies moved here, they were thinking of going to Louisville and they were thinking of going to Memphis. And John Calipari was supportive of them coming to Memphis, partly because he was, you know, he was really close with a lot of the local ownership and whatever, and realized as a good citizen, you should be in favor of it. Rick Pitino was at Louisville, and he was dead set against Louisville, the city of Louisville, getting an NBA team because he knew it would hurt the Cardinals, and I think that's unquestionably true, indisputably true.
Jeff, thank you so much.
Thanks, Connor. See ya.
Yes, sir. That was Jeff Calkins. You can hear him every single morning on these airwaves from 9 to 11 a.m. You can find him on Twitter at Jeff_Calkins. When we come back, George and I got to do the Blitz. We got to preview Thursday Night Football. We got to preview the Grizzlies game tonight. And then we got to talk about a shocking interview in college football over at North Carolina. You listen to Connor Dunning on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 929 FM ESPN. Stick around. Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe Kuhn. I've got some bad news to report. Bad news. Breaking Grizzlies news. From DeMichael Cole, Taylor Jenkins said the Grizzlies weren't comfortable with where Zach Edey is in his progression. We'll continue to monitor him over the next couple of weeks. Ugh, I feel like I just got shot in the heart. Absolutely devastating.
Heartbreaker.
Oh, my God. I was so excited to watch Zach Edey play basketball again, and we're going to have to wait a little bit longer. Absolutely brutal. If you're as hurt as I am, I do have an option for you, though, to have some fun tonight. You can join me at Hampline at 7 o'clock to play Christmas Trivia. Kevin Cerrito, Christmas Trivia. It is that time of the year. Come out at 7 o'clock. We have great beers over at Hampline. They got an amazing, amazing pizza oven. Come out. Hang out with us. But right now, on the show, every day we do the Blitz, we got to do it again right now. And as always, the Blitz is brought to you by Sissy's Log Cabin. George, what you got for me?
Kings visit Memphis tonight. That is Sacramento Kings visit Memphis tonight to take on the Grizzlies. We have a Grizzlies PR update. They will be without Luke Kennard, but they remain a 4.5-point favorite. What are the keys to the game tonight for you, Connor?
The keys to the game tonight for me: do not collapse in the fourth quarter. Simple. Just kidding. Really, tonight, you have to contain Sabonis. Contain Sabonis. He's going to pop off. He's going to do his thing. De'Aaron Fox, he's going to go hard, because every single time he plays Ja Morant, he feels like he's disrespected. Every time people talk about point guards, Ja's, you know, routinely and should be ranked over him. So he's always taken this matchup a bit personal. So if Sabonis is going to pop off, you've got to either try to contain him or you've got to try to contain De'Aaron Fox. Perimeter defense is going to be very important tonight. Three-point shooting is going to be very important tonight. The Sacramento Kings are horrific on the perimeter. They're giving up 15 open threes a game on average per game. For some reason, the Sacramento Kings this season haven't been able to put it together. They're 10-12. They're 5-5 when they play away games. The Memphis Grizzlies right now are on a 5-game winning streak at home. You were looking to extend that. So the keys of the game tonight are simple. Knock down your threes. Play perimeter defense on De'Aaron Fox. Allow one of these guys to pop off, but don't let both of them pop off.
To take a note from Eric Hasseltine, who was on Jeffrey Wright earlier, he talked about this specifically, and it did have to do a little bit with the Dallas game, in that we're going to have to pretty early on figure out the strike zone for the officials to what physicality they're going to allow, because if they're allowing a lot of physicality, down low is going to be tough. Sabonis is one of the stronger players in the NBA, and if he's allowed to play with the physicality that he wants to, it is going to be a long, long evening for the Grizzlies' bigs.
Well, you hear it every single game. You'll hear Pete talking about it, Brevin talking about it, Eric talks about it constantly. Team rebounding. The Memphis Grizzlies don't have a dominant rebounder. They don't have a 10 rebounds per game type of guy. We've seen Santi Aldama pop off a few times this season, but in that Dallas Mavericks game, one of the huge issues was offensive rebounds. You can even go back to that Bulls game that they blew. Offensive rebounds got them. Those Nets games, offensive rebounds got them. You've got to team rebound. You've got to keep Sabonis off the boards, because you know that any night he can pop off for 20 rebounds. That is what he does. It is his bread and butter. He's not going to step out to shoot a three. He's going to stay in the paint and try to make your life hell. The Kings are just an odd team this year. I don't really understand why they haven't been able to get it going. I thought that the addition of DeMar DeRozan was actually going to benefit them. But in a weird way, it's kind of changed the way they've operated on the offensive end. They've had to slow it down a little bit. They're not running as much. Keegan Murray, he hasn't been highlighted as much in the offense as he was in the past. De'Aaron Fox is having a good season. So is Sabonis. That's why my fear is that they're going to begin to get it rolling here soon, and I don't want that to start tonight with the Grizzlies. So you got to play your basketball. And, you know, I sound like a broken record here. Play your guys. You can sit them. If you have a big lead, sit them. The Sacramento Kings have been in a lot of blowout games this year. I hope we see another one tonight. But Sabonis is the reason why I think this is going to be a really tough game. He always gives the Grizzlies fits. He's a big physical guy. And again, the Zach Edey news is devastating, because I talked to Parker Fleming about it. Tonight would have been a great game for Zach Edey to play. I understand he wouldn't have been back tonight, but it's the prototype why you have Zach Edey game. They have a bruising big, and we have a 7'4 Hulk that we can throw at him and hopefully slow him down a little bit. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens tonight. In the last 10 games, the Grizzlies are 7-3, averaging 121 points a game, 47 rebounds a game, and 30 assists, which is phenomenal. 9 steals, 7.2 blocks, while shooting 48% from the field. Their opponents have averaged 113 points per game. The Grizzlies are playing great defense. They've been moving the basketball. You got to continue to do that tonight. The Kings have been struggling in their last 10, 3-7, 112 points per game, 42 rebounds a game, 25 assists, 7.2 steals, 5.2 blocks, only shooting 47% from the field, and their opponents have averaged 115. George mentioned it a little bit earlier, but the Grizzlies are going to be without Zach Edey, they're going to be without Vince Williams Jr., they're going to be without G.G. Jackson, and they're going to be without Luke Kennard, which I want to talk to you about Luke Kennard a little bit. There's been a lot of conversations about him in the last few days and what his role would be on this Grizzlies team when everybody comes back healthy. Now, what I would say to that is, it's going to be a few weeks, maybe a month, 2 months, before we see this team fully healthy. I think that Luke Kennard has been solid when he's been in for the Grizzlies. He's playmaking at a higher level than he usually has. He's scrappy enough on the defensive end to where he's not a traffic cone. My issue with Luke Kennard is shoot the ball. You're a three-point shooter. You're damn near the best three-point shooter in the NBA when you shoot a high volume. The only thing he should be looking to do is shooting the basketball. There have been a lot of times this season where I felt like he has passed up an open three to try to make a better play. And listen, that's great. I understand that the new offense, ball movement, ball movement, ball movement. That's what you're looking for. But Luke Kennard, you're here in Memphis to shoot threes. If you feel leather, brother, I want that thing going to the rim.
Yeah, I think that's – I don't want to say that it's been an issue with Kennard's game because it's been good to see because, like you said, the prototype that he fits is purely catch and shoot. And that's all he's really been up to this point. And seeing him try to integrate more into the offense in general is a good thing because it can even show some of the younger guys, say, hey, we know what you're good at and we know what your best attribute is, but we still want you to fit into the team game. That said, you said he's one of the best shooters in the NBA currently. If you're looking at like his volume numbers and his percentages there, he's one of the top shooters in NBA history.
Yeah.
Which is just insane to say about a guy who is probably, what would you say, seventh or, you know, eighth on the like in the rotation? He doesn't come in and play that many minutes.
Further down. He's further down than that.
Ninth?
Probably ninth or tenth.
For a team that rotates or puts in as many players as they do.
Right now, the Grizzlies, once you get past like Smart and Santi, it's kind of matchup dependent.
Sure.
And that's how he's been doling them out. I mean, yeah. I think even Laravia is probably ahead of him right now in the rotation.
Based on his play, I would say so. Probably, I mean, definitely Scotty as well. Seeing as Scotty is kind of their second best distributor right now. And he facilitates the offense really well. One of the best things that I've seen with Scotty has just been the amount of pace that he plays with. He really, every time he's on the court, you know, you look and the Grizzlies have the ball, they're in the front court with 22 seconds left on the clock. I mean, he is really good at giving them the long possessions. And Kennard has kind of just been a tertiary piece. He's just been kind of there at times when he can be a real producer.
He's played 14 games this season. Now, some context is needed for some of these stats. He's only averaging 19.7 minutes per game, which is the second fewest of his career. So that matters with the next stat I'm about to say. But he's only taking 3.7 threes a game. Only 3.7 threes a game.
That's too few.
You've got to take more. And even though you're only playing 19 minutes a game, it still feels like 3.7 threes is not enough, especially with how many open shots we've been seeing the Grizzlies get this season. So we definitely need to see an uptick in that. I still think that Luke Kennard can be, you know, a positive on this Grizzlies team. To be honest, the lineups that he has been in have mostly worked because he is a better playmaker than people give him credit for, but that's not necessarily what they need him to do here. Shoot the basketball. He's still shooting 40% from three, but a couple seasons ago, he played in 2022, 2023, played 24 games for the Memphis Grizzlies. What do you think he shot from three?
If I had to take a guess, just based on probably 48%?
Close, 54.
Wow. I was going to say higher, but 54% is absurd.
He was taking 5.7 a game, and he was hitting 54% of them for the Memphis Grizzlies 2 years ago.
Truly, like you just said, he just needs to take more shots. And for what it's worth as well, he's almost always going to be out there with someone else in the backcourt who is just as good a facilitator as him.
Right, 100%.
So, it does come down to, I understand you want to be part of the offense, and it's a good thing that you're taking that upon yourself to do. Sometimes you just need to pick and pop.
But tonight, Memphis Grizzlies taking on the Sacramento Kings. You can listen to that right here on 929 FM ESPN. Eric Hasseltine will be on the call at 7. We will have pregame at 6:30. It's going to be a difficult game for the Grizzlies tonight. The Sacramento Kings are a scrappy team. They're usually a good defensive team. They've been struggling to put it together this season so far, but they are one of those where you cannot sleepwalk into this game. And my expectation for the Grizzlies is after the performance they had in the fourth quarter against the Dallas Mavericks, this is a team that usually bounces back and has good performances after they drop one. So I expect a Grizzlies win tonight. I believe in them. I think that Ja Morant should probably have a big game. The battle between him and De'Aaron Fox will be fun. The battle between Jaren Jackson Jr. and Sabonis will be fun. It's really going to come down to what other role guys step up. We need a big Desmond Bane game tonight. That would be huge. A good Santi Aldama game would go a long way. So let's hope the Grizzlies show up tonight.
The University of North Carolina football, the Tar Heels interview Bill Belichick. Legendary NFL coach Bill Belichick interviewed for the vacant North Carolina job this week, according to Inside Carolina, and has since been backed up by a ton of other sources, you know, in sports media. This is the first known formal contact between Belichick and a collegiate job since he left the New England Patriots in 2023.
Could you imagine Bill Belichick sitting in a living room trying to recruit somebody?
Literally or figuratively?
Both.
Figuratively, I can imagine it, and it sounds hilarious. Literally, based on the way that the college game has evolved,
No. I can't see it. It's an awesome interview for them to get.
Oh, yeah.
But the only thing I can think of is him sitting in a living room being like, you know who Jumpman is? Michael Jordan. He's our biggest booster. Do you like Tar Heel Blue? It's just, what is he going to say to somebody? Because it's Bill Belichick. I mean, all he would have to say is really, I'm Bill Belichick. You know who Tom Brady is?
He's going to play for me. He's going to sit down with some defensive players and say, do you want to look like Lawrence Taylor?
Yeah.
Since we all know that's his favorite player of all time.
No, Ed Reed's his favorite player of all time. The way he talks about Ed Reed is how I hope everyone talks about the person they're married to. I've never seen somebody more in love with a human being. The few times I've seen Bill Belichick smile,
it's all talking about
Ed Reed. It's when he's talking about Ed Reed. He has talked about how he had defensive schemes that he would have just because Ed Reed was on the field. They had different special teams things they would run if Ed Reed happened to show up. Most of the time, Ed Reed wasn't even on the field during special teams, but he had an Ed Reed just-in-case playbook because he was that good at football. He has said that he is the only person that he thinks has ever gotten Tom Brady. But Bill Belichick, as a college coach, is a fascinating thought. It would be fun. I just can't imagine that he wants to commit to the workload that it's going to take to be a college coach in today's game. Especially at North Carolina, to be honest.
Yeah.
I could see it if it was like, I don't know, if Ohio State opens up here soon. That one would make much more sense to me. You would have the resources. It's just, North Carolina feels like an odd fit. To me, this signals more Bill Belichick is ready to get back into football, and he is putting it out there that he's ready to get back into football. But in college, I just don't see it.
I don't see it either. It would be a very strange fit. And there are other ACC schools, if that's where he decided, you know, I really want to, you know, be somewhere on the coast. There are other ACC schools that I think would be better fits. North Carolina has never exactly been a football powerhouse by any means. I mean, they've had some nice pieces come out of there, you know, at the next level, but I just don't see it as a great fit either.
He's 73 years old in April. He's never worked in college sports. The closest that he's kind of gotten to the college game was his father was an assistant at Navy. His son works for Washington. I think he was named defensive coordinator in 2024.
Yeah.
So he's got like some ties to college, but he's never worked in college football. And it doesn't make much sense for me for arguably the greatest coach we've ever seen in football. I would put Saban number one. I'd put Belichick number two. I just don't see why he would jump into college at 73 years old when it's pretty clear that NFL jobs opening up soon. He's going to be in the race for him because he's Bill Belichick. But God, it is funny to think of him in a living room. I'm Bill Belichick. Did you see what I did to Tom Brady? Did you watch that documentary on Apple? It wasn't very fair to me. I'm Bill Belichick. Come play for North Carolina.
The Detroit Lions host Green Bay Packers on Thursday night, which is tonight in Thursday Night Football, hoping to push their winning streak to a franchise record 11 straight.
It's going to be a good football game.
It should be. I have a couple interesting, like,
you got some sabermetrics for me?
Not sabermetrics, but tidbits with this one. For one, this one goes to the Lions. Their front seven is decimated by injury.
Yeah.
They're running out, you know, third string players as their starters because they're missing so many players. They have, I want to say, currently 14 players total on the injured reserve for this team. It is really bad. And that's not including playmakers like Josh Pascal and Levi Uruzurike, who are not playing tonight. The other tidbit that I know you wanted to talk about a little bit was Jordan Love's love of Toyota-thon, which we saw last season. It could be a question of correlation or causation.
You don't say.
But it seems like he does really well every time Toyota-thon comes around.
Yeah, Jordan Love just must love him some trucks. Must love him some trucks. But now it is clearly to me, Jordan Love deals with injuries a lot of the time in early season.
True.
And then he gets his footing and they get rolling later in the season. And that's probably why he is better. I think it just has more to do with the schedule than it does actual Toyota-thon. It would be hysterical, though, if like tonight after a big win that they may have, I would pick the Lions tonight. But if they were able to pull it out, if he came up and he was like, I would like to thank Toyota-thon for giving me the power to beat the Detroit Lions and snap their 11-game winning streak. Nobody's going to take me out into the ocean and drown me because I'm going to be in my truck, and you can't drown a truck. It's just that would be an unbelievable, all of a sudden he becomes a spokesperson for them, and you're like, where did this come from? But it's going to be a good game tonight. But to your point, they're just missing a lot of people on the defensive side of the football, and that is why Gabe picked them to go to the Super Bowl. I still think it's a good pick to go to the Super Bowl, but you can't help but think, are they going to get caught in the playoffs? Are they going to get caught in the later season because they've lost so many guys on the defensive side? And it does feel like that. I know that they have a good offense with Jared Goff, and you know, you've got Thunder and Lightning back there in the backfield, but the identity of the Detroit Lions is it's defense, it's grit, it's grime. We're going to bite your kneecaps off. And every single guy that goes down happens to be one of their most important guys. Like, every single time they go down. Like, when I was watching the game the other day, I was like, oh, please don't be Rodriguez. Please don't be Rodriguez. Lo and behold, Rodriguez was the guy that got hurt. He's out for the season. It's just been devastating to watch this team have its best season in their history, pretty much. And it's getting undercut by injuries. And I just hope that we don't get to the playoffs and there's a moment where we would say, if the Detroit Lions were fully healthy, they would have been able to push through. That's just what worries me about the Lions.
Yeah, there are a couple pieces that have, you know, stepped up into those roles. Jack Campbell has been fantastic for them in the linebacking core, especially with the loss of Alex Anzalone.
It's another one of those picks that people crush them for.
Oh,
turns
yeah.
out, really good football player.
Well, it's between the ears. He was always a smart player in college, and we're seeing it now. We're like, wow, even without Alex Anzalone next to him, who's a great linebacker, mind you, Jack Campbell has really stepped up into that role. Hutchinson's brutal injury earlier on
it's
in the
awful.
Season.
Awful.
That was one of those ones where I saw it live. Like, I was just watching. I was like, oh, he's out for a long time. To be fair as well, the Packers are also missing some pieces on defense, namely Jair Alexander is not playing this game. Neither is what's his last name? The other corner across from him. It's not Bellamy. It's something like that. But he's also going to be out for this game. So I would not be surprised if...
Ballantyne?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Corey Ballantyne is out for this game as well. So the Packers secondary is where they have a lot of their injuries. So
yeah,
we're going to see...
Alexander, Edgerrin Cooper's out.
Yes, which is going to make Montgomery's day a little bit easier. Cooper's been playing at a very high level for them this season, and that's another one of those players where a bit unheralded. We didn't expect this out of him to start the season, but it should be a big day for Amon-Ra St. Brown and this running game. I'm also going to take the Lions to win, but cautiously.
Cautiously. If it wasn't at home, I'd probably pick the Packers.
That's fair.
But it's a home game for the Lions. They're a 3-point favorite tonight, and I do hope they pull it out. To be honest, I don't know how it happened, but I have a lot of Detroit Lion fans in my life. Mm-hmm. There's just some teams where I'm like, I don't know how all these people are fans of this certain team, but I happen to know far too many Detroit Lions fans for living in the city of Memphis. But, you know, I'm rooting for them. 3-point favorite. That will be at 7:15 tonight on Prime Video. When we come back, we got to close up the show with Small Talk. Listen to Connor Dunning on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 929 FM ESPN. Stick around. Welcome back to the Gabe Kuhn Show. This is Connor Dunning filling in for Gabe. It is time for Small Talk. We do it to close out the show. And today there's only really one story that I'm interested in. Lonzo Ball had a great profile of him over on ESPN. I highly recommend people go and read it. I'm a huge fan of Lonzo Ball. I'm rooting for him this season. He's one of the better comeback stories in the NBA. Before he got hurt a few seasons ago, he was absolutely electric on those Bulls teams. And it was, you know, they were a really fun team. They had DeMar DeRozan, they had Vucevic, they had Lonzo Ball. They were really rolling there for a minute. And then once he got hurt, everybody on the team seemed to get hurt and just went downhill from there. But he has returned to the NBA this year. But he had an interesting quote, George, talking about the Big Baller brand basketball shoes. Here's what he had to say. They were like kickball shoes. I wasn't really getting hurt like that until I started wearing them. And Lonzo, I'm rooting for you, man. But Duh. Shoes that your dad made, probably not the best to wear in the NBA. Probably should have stuck with Nike, Adidas, something like that. When your wealth is your health. You cannot play games like that. I understand wanting to help your family. I understand wanting to promote those shoes, but that was a horrific decision when it happened. When people found out he was wearing Big Baller Brand, everyone said, I bet this leads to injury. And it led to almost career-ending injury. He had to have a surgery that has rarely happened for him to come back. He couldn't pick up his daughter. His knees were so bad. And it all kind of stems back to those shoes.
I mean, we're not shocked. We're not surprised that going from something or brands that people have been wearing in the NBA since literally forever to, oh, cool, my name is on these because my dad made them. I'm going to wear them at the highest level. This is my shocked face.
Not great. Not great. But I am happy that Lonzo Ball is back, and I highly recommend people go read that story. It was one of the better stories I've read on ESPN about the NBA this year. But that's going to be it for the Gabe Kuhn Show today. I want to thank my guest, Parker Fleming. I want to thank Jeff Calkins. I want to thank George for his great work. As always, King George, make sure you're following him on Twitter at KingGeorge94. Stick around on 929 FM ESPN. You'll have Grizzlies pregame at 6:30 and then the tip at 7 o'clock. Grizzlies Kings. Peace.